The Florida community of mindfulness is happy to make these talks available to you. If you find this talk to be a benefit, please consider making a donation to support us. You'll find a donation button on the talks section of our website, floridamindfulness.org. Thank you, and may you be happy and free of suffering.
We have now come to this final morning, this final day of this four-day retreat in Tampa, entitled Mind Training, How to Use the Thinking Mind to Support Your Transformation Rather Than Sabotaging It. And so we have been on a, since this is a group retreat, we have been on a journey as a group, but we have also been on a journey individually. And has been on their own personal journey. As I said on the first day, basically, outwardly, nothing is happening. We wake up in the morning, we brush our teeth, we come down, we have something to drink, whatever, come in the meditation hall, sit, stand, walk, sit, stand, walk, go to breakfast. After breakfast, do whatever we do, go for a walk, walk in meditation, listen to a talk, eat lunch, rest, do mindful movements, have a guided meditation, right? Deep sharing, deep listening, you know, just that's, you know, same thing in the evening. That's all that's happened. Trees are still there. Sky is still above us. Ground is still below us. Nothing has happened, right? In reality. But because most of us don't live in reality, we live in the reality of our thoughts, of our emotions, of perceptions, right? Many of us have had a very different kind of four-day journey, right? Is that true? Perhaps there's been lots of drama, emotion, stuck. Working through, understanding, not understanding, you know, right? Can you see this journey that individually we might have been on this past 4 days? And that whole journey has only taken place in one place. Can anybody guess where that one place is, where that journey has gone on? In our mind and nowhere else. And not even in the mind of the person sitting next to you. They've been on their own personal journey. And that is the truth, isn't it? And when you add it all up, if you add up all your thoughts, all your emotions, all your experiences of these past 4 days, what would they add up to? What do they add up to, Dana? Nothing. Out of the mouth of babes. Nothing. Here we are again. You know, we make up, you know, day four is a story. There's no such thing as day four. I mean, it looks, do the trees know this is day four? Does the sky know this is day four? No. It's a story we made up. Beginning, end, just a story. Now, Dana, you said, when you look at all the drama, the ups and downs, successes, failures, hopes and fears, you know, the whole deal of the last 4 days, when you kind of objectively look and add it all up, you say it adds up to what? Nothing. Now, what if you just went back? How old are you? 30. If you just went back 30 years to all the thoughts, all the feelings, all the dramas, all the ups and downs, backs and forth, ins and outs of your internal drama, what does it all add up to? Nothing. Good student. here we are, right? Whatever we've gone through, whether this has been a wonderful retreat or a terrible retreat, right? Whether you've had amazing breakthroughs, whether it's just been plodding through the muck. Here we are, sitting here, together. Eyes seeing, nose smelling, ear hearing, tasting, feeling, right? Sensations in the body. To know that is wisdom. To not to know that is delusion. It's very simple. At the end of the day, whatever our past has been, whatever our issues are, whatever our ideas and concepts have been, they all add up to nothing. And no matter what it's been, we all have the same reality, which is right now. How am I showing up? Right now, how am I showing up? Am I showing up in presence, in awareness? Right. That's the inner. How do I relate to all this? With understanding, kindness, compassion. Am I missing anything? This is what the Buddha teaching tells us. Right thought, right? We've dealt with right thought. Right thought needs to be based on right understanding, another one of the Eightfold Path, right? So, right understanding means understanding the nature of this reality. One of the things we know in right understanding, we understand what? Everything's impermanent. Right? When we do the five remembrances, that's just the human aspect of it. We all get sick, we all age, we all die. Everyone. No exceptions. Villains die, Buddhas die. Villains get sick, Buddhas get sick. Villains age, Buddhas age. Is that clear? It happens to everyone. How it happens and when it happens, that's due to something else. So on one hand, everything is changing, everything is permanent, nothing is stable, right? That's just right understanding. In this world of impermanence and change, why do things unfold the way they do? Because of causes and conditions. It's always causes and conditions. Why did this happen to me? Causes and conditions. Why didn't this other happen to me? Causes and conditions. It's always causes and conditions, nothing else but that. That's all. Right understanding. Another part of right understanding is dukkha, suffering, dissatisfaction, unsatisfactoriness of this life. Why is the world the way it is? Because it's made up of sentient beings. Sentient beings have deluded minds. They don't see clearly. They distort reality. Right? In this world of total impermanence, they see permanence and they grasp. They avert. They see self and ego. Where there really is no self or ego. And so they act totally from their self-centeredness in this life. Delusion plus self-centeredness, we get suffering. if you have suffered in this life, if you have been the recipient of suffering in this life from other people, it is because of causes and conditions, and those causes and conditions are unfolding because of the fundamental delusive nature of this world, and therefore it produces suffering. We are entitled to nothing. We're not entitled to a happy life. We're not entitled to a happy childhood. We're not entitled to a happy retirement. That is just an idea we have. It's a fabrication. Ideas aren't real. We're entitled to nothing. When you know that, that's very empowering. Heaven and hell are my own creation. The stuff of this life, the happiness or unhappiness, the heaven or hell of this life is within my hands to create. Because it's of the mind. Now, most people don't know that, do they? So they continue to just do what they do. Grasping, averting, looking for pleasure where there is no real pleasure to be found. Looking for happiness where there's no intrinsic happiness to be found. Wanting, thinking they're going to get happiness and all they do is harm other people and themselves. That's just the way it is. That's what the Buddha called samsara. This realm is called the samsaric realm. It is characterized by what? Impermanence. Karma. Dukkha. That's just the way it is. But there is another way. Buddhas appear in this world. That's why we, you know, make a big deal about them. We say how wonderful that they've appeared in this world, that the masters and the teachers have appeared in this world, because they show us another way, that to our own inferior intellect, we would never get. Now, for many people here who think they're quite highly educated and smart, people are going, he's very smart. Oh, she's very smart. No, they're not. If they were smart, they wouldn't suffer. And they wouldn't cause suffering to others. What we see in our world with, you know, with smartness and degrees and smart business people and smart lawyers and smart this and smart that is what? That's not intelligence. Real intelligence. Real intelligence understands the nature of what's going on in this world and knows how not to suffer and cause. That is the use of this intelligent mind of ours. Buddhism has always said, human beings, you have incredible intelligence. What a gift. You can reflect on your condition. You can discern wholesome from unwholesome. You can understand the nature of reality, the nature of your own mind. You know, that's that's the gift we've been given. But we don't use it. We use our intelligence for what? For getting what we want. For making money. For getting ahead. For learning and filling this head with all kinds of meaningless information. Right? Isn't that what we use it? So we can talk intelligently to each other. Why am I listening to podcasts morning, noon, and night? So I can talk intelligently to people. It's kind of mind-blowing. Yeah, we have this wonderful intelligence, but we don't use it for what it's really most advantageous for, to discern the nature of reality, to discern the wholesome from the unwholesome, to understand how to help sentient beings so they can ease their suffering. Myself, my family, my friends, my Sangha, my community, my world. That's what this is really meant to be used for. So in this retreat, we've learned, you know, so again, right thought is based on right understanding. Right understanding is the big picture. Without the big picture, right, we can go, why is this happening to me? You see, or why did that happen to me? Right, that's where we go. Why is this happening to me? Why did this happen to me? Why is this happening to my loved ones? Why is this happening to the world, right? Can you see the futility and the meaninglessness of that question? Because why? Because of causes and conditions. Because of karma. Why am I the way I am? Because I am the product, as we say every morning, right? I am the product of my thoughts, you know, I am the product of the actions of my body, speech, and mind. That's it. That's all I am. Each of us sitting here right now, that's all we are. We are the product of the actions of our body, speech, and mind. That's why we are what we are right now. And for those of you who've been sitting for the last 4 days, highly disappointed or frustrated by your mind and its content, you got nobody to blame. Nobody to blame. But if we understand more deeply what's going on in this life, and if we find a path that leads out of the realm of delusion, out of the realm of distortion, out of the realm of unhappiness and dissatisfaction and affliction and anger and fear and resentment and envy and, you know, disappointment and hurt. You know what I'm talking about? You know, there's a way out of that. So clear. This teaching is so clear. And there are many people sitting in this room who have heard this teaching, been on retreat for 5, 10, 15 years, and still... what? Who's going to say it for me? And still what? Still don't get it. Why don't they get it? Because they don't take refuge in the path, in the Dharma. To take refuge in the Dharma means I trust this to guide me in this life. Even though I don't have a clue, even though I am lost in my own mental fabrications, my own delusions, I don't have to follow them anymore. Right? It's like being lost in the woods and finding a guide. Right? Up to then, you've been lost, stumbling about. Right? Hope and fear has been your game plan. Yeah, you find a path in the woods and you go, oh, this is the way out. Hope doesn't go where you want. Just goes around to another part of the woods. You get afraid. I'll never get out of here. You find another path. Oh, hope. When I get this house, then I'll be happy. When I get this new job, then I'll be happy. When I get this new relationship, then I'll be happy. When I go on vacation, then I'll be happy. When I have a child, then I'll be happy. Right? All these different paths that we think, what? This finally is the path that will get me to happiness. And then in time, what happens? The dissatisfaction sets in, right? The dissatisfaction sets in. So we look around for another, you know, can you, endlessly, endlessly. So we have to be discriminating and discerning and intelligent. So when we find a path, investigate it. Will this path get me out of the woods? Not, is this a path, you see? That's what we've done up to now. Oh, you know, we'll take anything that comes along. We're so lost that anything that looks like a path, right, we'll follow. Anybody who looks like they know a little more than me, I'll follow. Right? And endlessly we stumble about. So, it is important to realize there are valid paths that lead to everything you want. Now, what do we need beside the path? Well, before we need will, we need a guide. We need a guide. To even find the path, we need a guide. Right? To know there's a path, I read in my guidebook, there is a path somewhere in this, you know, 100-square-mile woods, there is a path out. Right? But I can't find it. On my own, I cannot find it. I need a guide. Okay? So, make sure there is a valid path. Make sure the guide you find knows how to get you out. Right? If you find a guide who's as lost as you are, but he's good company or she's good company, you know, fun to be with, entertaining, give nice talks, you know, I mean, right? It's better than being alone. I'll grant you that. All right? But, you know, you want out. So make sure the guide you find has been out. If the guide has only read the same guidebooks you did, right? You know, you're going to be stumbling around a lot more. But if you find a guide that knows the way out, knows where the path is, knows how to follow it, I mean, what would you do then, Dan? Follow it. Why don't we follow it? I mean, why? You know why? Because we haven't acknowledged we're lost and we're unhappy. Not that we haven't thought that from time to time. But we haven't just come to a real decisive moment in life and said, what? I am lost. I cannot do this by myself. I need a guide. Is that clear? Anybody want to hear ever admit that they were once an addict or an alcoholic and are now sober? Where did you come to? At one point, after deluding yourself for years and years and years, at some point, and I don't even know what your story is, but at some point you came to a moment in life where you finally said what? I give up. I cannot what? I can't do this myself. Right? I need what? Help. I need help. Right? What a liberating moment. Right? Because up to that point, you've been what? Trying to do it yourself with this puny intellect and all your delusions and all your stories and all your pain, right? Oh, and what a relief. I need help. How wonderful, there is help. They're a mentor. I mean, this is like, how easy this is. Wow, I thought this was hard. So, you know, it's not as if we have not been lost and stumbling in the woods, but we haven't come to the moment where we go, this is not working. I am stuck in my thoughts. I am stuck in my constructs. I can't see out of the box. What is the box? Myself. What is myself? There's no real self. Myself is made up of all my concepts, all my ideas, all my issues, all my thoughts about the past and the future, all my afflictive emotions, right? I can't see beyond that. All I know how to do is kind of work them, right? Kind of work them. So, now, we heard about the path, we found the guide, now we're following him, right, Dan? Okay. Now, along the way, you know, it's a journey. You know, it's not like, you know, the out is over there. It's a journey, Dan, okay? Now, along the way, you encounter other people who are lost. Now, what do you say? Screw them. You know, I am only concerned about one thing, is getting myself out of here, and you say to the guide, don't pay him any mind, right? Let's just go. I'll give you some extra money. Let's just... No. Right? You realize as you go along, wow, there are lots of other people lost in the woods. You say, come on. There's a path and there's a guide, right? That's called Sangha. We journey together. We help each other. We support each other. We don't want anybody to stay in the woods lost, do we? No. Now, there will be some people, right, who when you tell them there's a way out, they won't believe you, right? They don't want to leave their campfire. You know what I mean? At least I got a campfire. It's warm. Got a sleeping bag at night. You know what I mean? Got a little supply of food over here, you know, hunting, gathering kind of thing. Or, you know. I realize it's the woods and I'm lost and I don't have a clue, but at least, you know, I found a little comfortable place here by my campfire. Ooh, big supply of woods, right? So there are going to be lots of people who, when you say, come on out, you don't have to live like this, in this kind of deprivation, who will go, no, no. I'm okay. Even though they're suffering in the cold and the rain, you know what I mean? It's okay. Good enough to eat. Can make a fire, you know. Got somebody over there in a campsite over there that every now and then we get together. We got our own still, you know what I mean? We make our own shot. Right? Life's not bad, you know. Right? Why don't you stay here and join us? They'll say. You don't want to go walking on some path. Right? Can you really trust the guide? Do you really know it's going to do? You know what I mean? Oh, you begin to think, well, yeah, I don't know. You know, you see? Right now, nice little warm fire. Food, it's warm. Some moonshine to drink. Do I really want to keep walking. Do I really want to get out of the woods? Do I really believe there's a way out? Really believe. And that I can get it. And it's not that hard. I just got to follow the path. During the course of these 4 days, there's been a lot of reflection, there's been a lot of teaching, there's been a lot of meditation, learning the basic practice once again, repracticing for many, of just calming and stabilizing the mind, samatha, and learning to observe objectively the thoughts, feelings, perceptions that arise and disappear in the mind. To beginning to discern the difference between mental fabrication, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, etc., that are created by the mind, and what's going on in reality, direct information coming from our senses, that there is a dramatic difference. They are not the same. My thoughts about reality and reality are not the same. And we've also learned about right thought. Thoughts that are in accord with right understanding. And thoughts that facilitate happiness, well-being for myself and others. That is wholesome thoughts. Skillful thoughts. Thoughts based in reality. And those that are not. Right? And we're learning there's a practice called mind training where we can learn to train our mind, train our thoughts so they support us on the path rather than sabotage us on the path, divert us on the path. Right? So we've learned very practical things. We've learned the five ways of thought transformation, wholesome and unwholesome, presented in the Buddha Sutra. We've worked quite diligently with Thich Nhat Hanh's, are you sure, is it true? A willingness to challenge all our truths. And we have lots of them about everything and everybody. Is it true? Am I sure? Am I willing to submit all my core beliefs, all my truth about myself and life and the past and you? And, you know, am I willing to submit it to that simple criteria? Is it true? Am I sure it's true? Which is very liberating. So we've learned practice. Right? And yesterday we learned about another kind of mind training, bodhisattva mind training. It's a big step up. We learned about that. For those of you who are going to be in the upcoming Lojong, you'll hear these wonderful mind trainings. Turn adversity into the path of awakening. Be grateful to everyone and everything. Oh, that's what it's about. Why am I holding on to these afflictive emotions and memories that are gone anyhow? And as Dana wisely said, if you add them all up, they add up to nothing. So, in just a few hours, retreat will be over. and we'll be returning home. To each of us, that means different. That's a different life, different people, different situations, work, non-work, whatever, you know, we're returning to our life, right? We will no longer be nurtured by the retreat environment, right? We will not be in silence. We will not be in a sort of controlled environment with clear barriers about don't go outside of this. You can go anywhere. You can think anything. You can take down those barriers about past and future. Just go wild. Right? I can go anywhere, you see. Freedom. See, the self will revel. I'm free. I can do anything. I can go home and spend hours on the computer or on my bed or looking at this and looking at that and catching up with this and catching up with that, and I can turn on Netflix and watch 25 movies in a row, and I can eat whatever I want, you know, I mean, I can, you know, I don't have to follow a schedule. I'm free. But are you really free? You see? So that world's awaiting you. Right? And we don't have the restraints of retreat. Right? We don't here have Dharma talks. We don't have guided meditations. Right? We don't have all the reminders that we have. We're not surrounded by a community of practitioners who are practicing. So, it is up to us, each one of us. This is in the world of intentions, goals, aspirations, you know, to be very clear. What are my intentions in this life? What are my aspirations in this life for myself and how I show up in the world, right? How I spend my time, what's meaningful to me. We have to be very clear, because most of us live in a world where not only is that not supported and reinforced, but everybody wants us to come over and join their campfire and drink their moonshine. Right? Come on, let's have fun. I mean, not that I'm against fun. There's lots of things to enjoy. But you know what I mean. So you have to be very clear. There's nobody to restrain you except yourself. And when I say yourself, your aspiration, your intentions, your motivations, your commitments. So you have to be very clear. So it's very important. Going back into the world, I mean, this is the world too, that we're clear. Right? Because if you're not clear, you will get swept away, I assure you. And, you know, if not by tonight or tomorrow night, by Tuesday or Wednesday, retreat will be what? A dream. Right? So, it's up to each of us to be very clear about the practices that we learned here and how you want to continue them, how you want to support them, nurture them, what you need to do that. So why don't everybody just close their eyes a minute and we'll take down that little sign about the future and for a moment kind of think about your future. I mean, future meaning think about the world you're going back to. Think about your life that you led in the past and that world you're going back to. Right? Think about now, reflect on what you've learned here. What's been meaningful to you here? What's been helpful to you here? What's felt good about being here? and take a moment to really think, how am I going to ever bring this into my life? How am I going to protect this? Right? Whatever you've achieved, whatever positive experiences, whatever insights, whatever understandings, whatever clarity, might have come to you in these 4 days. Right? Imagine those are just little seedlings. They don't have deep roots. They're fairly recent. Right? The world you're going back to, for many of us, has deep roots. So how are you going to protect, nurture those seedlings within you so they don't get trampled, so they don't get blown over, so they don't get stepped on? This is a challenge. And we should all be clear within ourselves. If you're not clear, there's a good chance that, you know, that what you don't want to happen will happen, which this will be fade. Oh yeah, that was a great retreat, yeah. And we will find ourselves within a few days back to our old way of being, thinking, responding, because that's what's in the alaya, in the storehouse. There needs to be something even more powerful than our habit energy, our conditioning, and that is the power of intention, of aspiration, of commitment. Commitment's very powerful, right? Because commitment's very simple. Do this, don't do that. You don't have to think about it. So it's very helpful before we get it, you know what I mean? Like if you to have vows and commitments when you're not strong yet is very helpful. When you are strong, you don't need them as much. And that's about any undertaking. That's a challenge. Just to make a commitment. I'm going to exercise 30 minutes every day. That's my commitment. No matter how I feel, no matter what's going on, that's my commitment. Right? Then it's easy. Are you committed to cultivating the wholesome in the actions of your body, speech, and mind? Are you committed to no longer cultivating the unwholesome, the non-virtuous, the afflictive mind states, memories? What's your commitment? What's your intention? What's your vow to yourself? This is the only thing that will sustain us. Again, if you live in a monastery, if you live in a practice center year-round, then there's ongoing support and reminders. But we don't have that luxury. I mean, we do have sangha. We do have, you know, weekly meetings, you know. But it's up to each of us. What is my commitment? You might look inside your mind and realize, you know, I've never really looked at it that way, that personally. Am I committed to ending my suffering? Do I understand that anxiety, fear, sadness, despair, hopelessness, irritation, frustration, anger, jealousy, envy, hurt, are all afflictive mind states. And many more that we've been working on in this retreat. If you don't have criteria, it's very hard to make a choice, to discern. So please, are you clear in your own mind the mind states of body, speech, and mind that you want to cultivate, that you're committed to cultivating? Sustaining? And are you clearly committed to the ones that you do you and others a disservice? Or do you think your worries, your anxieties, your fears, your despairs, your angers, your resentments, your hurts are benefiting anyone at all? I mean, now's the time to get clear. And if your aspiration is beyond what we call small vehicle in Buddhism, which means just for my own happiness and well-being and peace of mind and the ending of my own suffering, if it goes beyond that, that you would love the suffering of those around you, if not everyone in the whole world also, to be remediated and come to an end, if you really want to help these people, if you want to be someone who can help lost people find their way out, and that's even a greater commitment or aspiration to your own transformation. Because if you don't know the way out, if you don't know the path, how are you going to help them out? Again, you could offer them companionship in their lostness, empathy, friendship, But, the fundamental situation hasn't changed at all. We're still lost, stumbling about. We're just not alone anymore. That's good. But if you want to be one of those who really can help a human being and their suffering, well, you have to have some experience of that yourself. It's another thing to ponder. See, these kind of questions that your capacity for discernment, for logic, for rational thinking can be an aid to you. We have, as human beings, that other animals don't have, other kind of sentient life don't have. We have the capacity to reflect on our condition. We have the capacity to see alternatives and options. That's a very, this self-awareness and self-reflection is a wonderful tool. That's why in Buddhism it says, you know, the problem isn't thinking. Thinking can be wonderful. Thinking can be liberating. Right thought. The problem is wrong thought, unwholesome thought, distorted thought. Okay? Nothing wrong with thinking. So we have a few moments. Does anyone have any questions about what's been said in terms of how, moving forward, back into your daily life, how to continue? This is the time to, is anybody, I mean, you don't have to, but is anybody not clear about what's been taught and shared and practiced here and how to bring it into their life? Into their relationships, into their workplace. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Right. So I mean, one incredible thing. Now again, we have to be careful because it is so accessible and easy. You know, that we, you know, and our mind, you know, our addictive compulsive mind can very easily, you know, more. Well, one Dharma talk is good. Why not two Dharma talks? Two are good. Why not three? Well, I already listened to one teacher, but, you know, there are 100 teachers out there. Why don't I just listen to them all, right? You know, we haven't even mastered the first teaching we got, but we're just out there accumulating teaching. So, forgive me for saying that, but you're absolutely right. Through the internet these days, it's a wonderful tool. No, it's okay. I'm not. We haven't developed software yet to monitor the computers of our members. So, no, I wasn't saying that. But I was just saying, you know, we have this, you know, accumulation kind of thing again. You know, practitioners didn't have this years ago. I mean, you know, they were fortunate they could just run into a teacher in their lifetime. Now, through the internet, we have such access. So, yeah, so the internet can be a wonderful tool. We can access teachers, not just Fred, but other great teachers that are available, as well as, you know, there's a lot of Buddhist literature and teachings, you know, that's very meaningful, that's accessible to us. But again, you know, it's like even with Fred's Dharma talks, I say to people, you know, sit first, as if you are in the meditation hall. Have an open mind. You know, the problem is, all right, I'm, you know, checking the news, checking this, checking my Facebook, checking this, or Instagram, I'm checking all this. Oh, now I'll check a Dharma talk, that, okay. And then, oh, I just got an email, oh, somebody just came across, I'm going to check that. Oh, got the text over here. Oh, back to the Dharma talk, okay. Does it sound familiar? That is not how to do it. Shut everything off. Close down all the windows. Be present and absorb. Not just me. I mean, that's a way to listen to a Dharma talk. You know, we're receiving information that can be helpful to getting us out of the woods of suffering, showing us the way. We need to kind of respect that Dharma and not treat it like just another piece of information of which we're just consuming. But you're absolutely right. Thank you. Any? Yes.
Maybe I'm just hung up on these words when you said we are entitled to nothing. But obviously we are entitled to follow the path.
Well, no, we're not entitled. We have the opportunity to follow the path. We have that opportunity. But there's, I mean, you know, there's no supernatural power. What? I mean, there's no, like, you might think, I'm entitled to what? I'm entitled to be happy. But who's entitling you to be happy? Oh, so that's a choice you're making to be happy. just because you've made the choice that you want to be happy doesn't mean you're going to get it, does it? No, you're not entitled to it. You have to do some work to be happy. That's what it means. When I say not be with that, you know, that just because we have an idea, you know, there are a lot of people who have ideals about the world. The world should be what? What's an ideal? The world should be peaceful. The world should be fair. The world should be just. Anything else the world should be? Safe. Okay? Ideal. Real. Even the English language distinguishes. An ideal is an idea. Idea plus an L. Ideal. Real, reality. Go to the dictionary. Very clear demarcations between what's reality and what's ideal. Is that clear? We have gotten confused. We think our ideas are real. You know what? When you confuse reality and non-reality in mental health, anybody in the mental health field here, what is that called? Delusional thinking. Sorry. Right? Distorted thinking. It's delusional. The real and ideal somehow got, you know, right? My hopes and aspirations, my ideals for myself and the world are just ideas. Right? That's what it means. Reality is reality. Now, here's your ideal, right, Maria? You want to be happy. But the reality is, forgive me, is you're miserable. Okay? So, here I'm just using you. Okay? So here you are miserable, but your ideal is, I want to be happy. Okay? You see? Oh. So the question is, how can you help Maria move in the direction of her ideal? How can we help the world and the reality of the world move toward some ideal? But we cannot forget that our ideal is just an idea of how we want the world to be and people to be and people should treat each other. Those are just ideas. That's not real. Real is what's happening. If you want to find out what's happening, open the newspaper or read it online. No, people don't open the newspaper. I mean, you know, what's happening in the world? Does anybody have an idea what's happening? Well, I mean, it's been 4 days. Go home. Open, you'll get, this is what's real. This is what's happening. Right? What do? Despair, judge, get angry. Right? Get scared. Right? Those are all maladaptive, dysfunctional, afflictive reactions. Right? Right? What do? Well, turn off the news. That's one way. Once you get it. But the response to that is, a positive response to that is what? Or build sangha. How can I help? You know, how can I create some other way of being in the world than this, which obviously just creates more pain and conflict and dissension and division and right and you know, right? So to have an afflictive response of anger or bitterness or fear is just like we do for ordinary life. The response is what? How can I be of help to this broken world? How can I be of help to these suffering people? See, those are positive emotions. It comes from love, compassion, understanding. So even in the, that's what it says. All those bodhisattvas that Jacqueline's been reciting, right? Even in the midst of suffering, they manifest. Right? I mean, each one of them, right? Show the way. Even Kshitagarbha, in the darkest hells, he goes to help hell beings. What's the response to suffering? The compassionate response to suffering is what? What is it, Jessica? How can I help? Right? There you go. See how simple it is? It's not like, oh, not more suffering. Oh, I can't take it anymore. Right? I need a drink. Okay. No, that's not the response. How can I help? Isn't that the simple response to suffering? Yeah, very simple. As it says in the Zen tradition, right? You've heard me say it before. When we're asleep at night and the pillow slips away from under our head, unconsciously, our arm, our hand reaches out to put the pillow back under our head. No thought. Just a response. Right? The left hand itches, the right hand scratches. It's that simple. No thought. Bang the elbow. Left hand comes over to massage it. No thought. That's compassion. See how simple it is? Because the body doesn't know separation. We know separation. We think we're all separate, different. You know, there's a phrase in Buddhism, all beings, one body. Right? So just like a body. The body doesn't discriminate between parts. Right elbow hurts, left hand comes over. Please, everybody, do that. See? I mean, to do these kinds of things. You itch, you scratch, right? I mean, people do all the time. You know, your neck's a little sore. What do you do? The hands come up. Yeah, how nice. The hands don't go, I'm fine. You know, I'm down here resting quite comfortably. I mean, don't. You know, I'm like, why should I go up there and do all that nonsense? You know? Right? You see, all beings, one body. That's the way to be. Anything else before we end? So good. So this has been a good retreat. I thank you all for your deep practice. I mean, from my point of view and the point of view, our little team of people who've been kind of overseeing this retreat, we meet every day after dinner. And really, because I'm not here all the time, other people are in the deep sharing or deep listening or different things. And I just continue to hear how everybody is practicing. You know, it's been real sincerity in this practice. So I bow to you all. Hopefully, that this has been a meaningful experience for you, whatever, and that you will continue.